This is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Bruschi and Robin Dree.
Well, let's start out the week with the Duggars, shall we? We've got a lot of reaction to this story over the last 72 hours. So we're going to get into it because there's a lot of confusion, a lot of complicated dynamics in this story. It's kind of picking up where we left off a couple years ago with Josh, and now apparently another sibling. I guess when you have 19 kids and counting, I guess your odds do go up a certain amount that there is going to be some level of criminal behavior, but then you start to see a pattern of the same sort of things over and over, and it starts to make you go, huh, what's going on here? So we're going to do just that, and I want you guys to weigh in the comment section on YouTube and Substack or Facebook or wherever you're watching us and listening to us right now so you can be part of the conversation as well. With me, as always, Robin Drake, retired FBI Special Agent, Chief of the Counterintelligence Behavioral Analysis Program. So the Duggars, they're here in my town. Like, I've run into them several places over the years. I opened the door for Jim Bob not that long ago at a burger restaurant. And I didn't even realize, I'm like, oh, and they just kept coming. It was like a clown train.
You could tell by the tribe behind him.
It was literally like, I'm there and I'm like, just like opening the door, like as you do. And I'm like, he looks familiar. I'm like, oh God, it's them. And then they just kept coming and coming and coming and coming. And they were, I mean, it was just a simple interaction. They were very friendly and polite. I was polite back. I was hoping to God they hadn't seen me go off on rants about their brother, which I don't think they did. But
they don't do social media till they're married.
Yeah, it was that part of the. is that part of the thing? Is it like once you get married, you may use the internet?
Yeah. Oh, so Tony, you know, we're chatting before the show. This weekend was all about learning about the Duggars, and that's why I'm smiling. I love myself a great cult, God. Man.
This is all our opinion. This is, you know, allegedly insert all that stuff there.
And when you read the, you know, I've been listening to Jill's book all week, well, probably yesterday and today mostly, and I'm about 3 or 4 hours into it. And it's, I love because, you know, when you have source material that gives you great context rather than just court material, it really gives you a deeper understanding of what makes people do things, how this actually happened. And so that's what I've been able to kind of really pour through. So I've been really diving deep. And man, I just, cults are, and again, I characterize it as a cult, they wouldn't say it's a cult. And it's kind of on the fringes of it. And we'll obviously dive into it. But it's a definitely fascinating belief system, which if it wasn't corrupted by evil deeds, you know, it's wholesome, it's nice, it's and to a degree, you know, so, yeah.
Well, I mean, couldn't like any religion, I guess, be wholesome and nice to a certain, I mean, I guess there's some you could clearly argue could not be, but.
But
I think if a pure one at its core where it's not trying to control people, where it's, but at the end of the day, aren't they all trying to control people?
That is when you really dive religion. Deep.
Yeah.
The oldest religion is control. And that's what it all comes. And again, as a species, you know, just evolutionarily wise, you know, we didn't evolve beyond, you know, what chimpanzees can do is roughly 100, 150 is the biggest tribe they can manage. But the way you go beyond that, the way we did as a species is religion, because it offered a cause and effect control. It was the first legal system that comes into play. So there's consequences for actions. And so it allows us to evolve as a society. It's how we did evolve. But there's oodles and oodles of religions out there, offsprings of them, offspurts. But in all these cases where they take such a, and again, when you dive into the background of their religion, I can't remember.
IBLP, I believe.
Right. Fundamentalist Baptist, basically, you know, really extreme conservatism. There's a lot of really nice things in there when it comes to family and feeling safe. And the whole premise is to how do you feel safe and provide a sense of security in a chaotic world? I mean, that's what really attracts people into this. But inevitably you get some nutter in there that does a lot of harm when they take advantage of that system. So, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, and I saw, in case you're just getting caught up here and wondering what's going on, Joseph Duggar is the latest one to face charges. He's 31. He was arrested on March 18th of this year, 26, in Arkansas. He faces charges in Bay County, Florida, related to an alleged incident from 2020 during a family vacation in Panama City Beach. Now, before everybody starts jumping into the, well, that was 5 years ago. Yeah, and the kid was 9. Okay, they're 14 now. Because I've already heard this argued this weekend, where the first thing is, well, it was like 5. Yeah, they were 9. They know what that. Good luck figuring out what's happening to you from those that are around you that are supposed to be respectable, trustworthy, and very godly adults. And then you turn out a couple of years later. Oh, you mean what he was doing to me under the blanket was inappropriate? Yeah, and you wouldn't know it when you're 9 unless that has been exposed to you as something horrible and bad. Well, he came clean on it. Like, he's admitted to it. So anybody who's going to go down the road of, well, it's these years later, he's admitted to it.
Yeah. You know why? It's part of the religion.
Yeah.
So as long as as long as you admit it and your sin is forgiven, that's what it's all about.
So is it just don't get caught then? I mean, if you get caught, then you got to admit it. But if you're admitting to it, then you know it was wrong.
But you only admit it to parents because parents are the ultimate authority, not the legal system. Although they don't tell you not to talk to the legal system. So it's, again, they have their hierarchy and that's what I've been doing my deep dive on. It's like, how does this system work? And so the parents are the ultimate authority at all times. Honor thy parents. And Jill in her book was talking originally about how she thought that was until the age that they get their own families, their own marriage, but it doesn't really end. Because if you think about it, they have reps from a very, very young age. So for the sake of argument, we'll use the word cult, not in a negative context or anything, just as a collective mindset. So when we think of cults and we think of like the Vance Davidians or whatever it is, you know, and people that are sucked into these groups and organizations at an older age, then those reps they have as part of the indoctrination only happen for a period of time. And a lot of times, once they're mature or mature-ish in their 20s, maybe late teens, 30s, 40s, what happens is that inside a family of, you know, 14, I think when they started the TV specials on the Learning Channel, and then up to 19, you're indoctrinated in reps from birth that this is the way it is, this is what makes you feel safe, because they use throughout all the descriptions, fear is the greatest motivator, and the only way to overcome fear is to feel safe in family, and who makes you feel safe is the parents and their belief in God. So it's the structure is very cloistered, very exclusive, but it's also like every time they're exposed to something, the parents would explain it. The parents would say, do this, do this, do this. They had a lot of what they thought was transparency and openness and communication internal to the family, but they were never educated, Jill said, on sex education. It was very, very rudimentary, not appropriate or not appropriate. And the big thing above all else was forgiveness. Always must forgive, and it's a sin not to forgive. So they were in fear of not forgiving abhorrent behavior. See, I mean, it's a bad cycle if something really wrong happens.
Yes, it locks in predatory behavior.
Yes, over it does.
And, I mean, it enables it completely. And you hope to, and I guess here, I don't know if this is the theory of it, where it's like, okay, if everyone in this religion or in this family is perfect and without sin, which none of them are, I guess it could function okay, you know, but that's assuming that there's not one bad apple in here that's going to push it too far. Because, I mean, and in principle, the forgiveness thing, I mean, it's okay if you're like playing basketball or something and somebody shoved somebody a little bit too much. My bad. I'm sorry. I shouldn't have done that. I got, you know, innocent things like I stole a cookie, whatever, things that aren't like traumatizing for the rest of one's life. Then okay, I get that. But the thing is, it's like they seem to like enter it on this plane of delusion that nobody would ever go and do the horrific shit that these Duggar children have been accused of doing and have admitted to doing. It's like that assumption, it's like it doesn't equate. So it's never considered in the whole factor of existence, in the way that these people function, because, well, nobody does that. We're all godly human beings. And then the second someone does, it's not necessarily, let's prevent this from happening again. It's just ask for forgiveness and move on.
Right, because there's no accountability.
Yeah, as if it were something really minute.
No accountability. And at the first iteration that Josh was accused of this, the thing that Jill pointed out also was there was no therapy. There's no counseling. No. They don't believe any of that. They sent them away to work hard. That's it. Every time he had a transgression, just go work harder. We'll separate you from the family. You'll be fixed by hard work, and then you come back. Zero accountability for that. And we talked about last week with Coffendeffer a bit. You know, this actually, no, it wasn't Coff. It was Siobhan, love bombing that they do in these in particular cases. And so what's happening here is, you know what, Jill, it really struck me reading it and listening to it with Jill, one of the siblings, was they validation bomb you. So you're constantly going for approval, always approval. So your actions, if they're righteous actions, you get approval. And that's what all the children were seeking, was approval. And so who defines what you get approval for? The parents. And so the internal structure is extremely rigid and kind from their context. It's a fascinating situation they're in.
Yeah, and how could you go up against the leaders, because they just seem like kind of jovial doofuses.
Yeah.
I mean the aura, I would say, that Jim Bob had put out for all those years of I'm just kind of this goofy guy, you know, like not threatening. When you see him, there's plenty of threatening folks out there that are like, oh God, he's not one of them.
Yeah.
But I mean, that's what we saw on the surface. That's what we saw publicized. When we actually get down to, you know, some more brass tacks and accusations from behind the scenes, it's like, oh, maybe everything was not as perfect as all supposed to be. I'm not accusing him of any crime or anything like that.
And no malicious intent. Yeah. I mean, not malicious, you know, and we see that with other cults. You know, this is not a Lori Daybell Vallow kind of cult. This is no malicious intent. This is just stupid.
It's malicious through ignorance, is what it is.
Yeah,
and I think in a lot of ways,
incidental maliciousness. There you go.
And at some point, where does the line get drawn? Where your head's in the sand? Pull it out. Pull your ass out of the sand. This is insane. Because it keeps going. You can't keep pretending that there's not a problem here, or you're just going to pray it away. But that seems to be the way that they try to do it. Joseph, the one who's been charged now, he grew up watching his family protect Josh from consequences for years. If you want to go way back, we don't have to relitigate Josh. But we get into that where he had the accusations against the sisters. The sisters came out. The sisters were kind of forced to go on Megyn Kelly and downplay all the bullshit, which was then they've talked about in years later in Shiny Happy People and in her book, to basically, you know, kind of keep the peace, keep everybody happy. Mm-hmm. And we didn't even know what happened. It turns out, yeah, they did. And Josh knew what he was doing, too. And then they kept pretending that Josh didn't know anything about the birds and the bees all the way up to his televised wedding. I mean, it was just one big ruse the whole time. And I don't buy for a second that Jim, Bob, and Michelle weren't aware that, you know, this was going on. They were aware, but they seemed to think that he was healed and that these sort of things wouldn't continue on. And then he goes on into life, has this car dealership, and then gets busted because he partitions off his computer to have a second half of it strictly for CSAM material, basically. And that's why he's in jail now until 2032 or something. Right. So there's Josh. So Joseph grows up watching this, and he watches some of the family run away, some of the family depart and have nothing to do anymore, while mom and dad, everybody sits there, we will love our children forever, and we forgive, and blah, 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 blah. So when you have this going on, and basically there's not any real consequences, I guess, to the actions from within the family. It's still love. It's still this. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Josh is away. Josh's reaction to this has been, we'll get to that in a little bit. He was calling it, he used a term that was insane. Basically stating that this whole thing is just exploitation, and it's fantasy. When his brother
he set himself up as a victim.
Yeah, it's like, no, Josh, this is nothing to do with you. This is not sensationalized fiction, is what he said. He admitted to it, Josh. It's not fiction. I don't know what world you like to live in where you're still saying everything's fiction. He clearly hasn't really atoned for his sins, if you will, if he's still kind of going down that road. What do you think about this? Just the fact that you have this sort of environment growing up. You have a brother who had been accused of these things, who's been found guilty of these of offenses, you know, in this range. Is it remotely shocking at all then that you have another sibling that somehow seems to go down this road? I mean, even worse road, I would say, than Josh, because he's a grown ass adult.
Yeah, the research I did on this asking that same question: how does this happen? So the research will show, who knows what happened to this family. There's been no reports of this, but the research will show that typically a pedophile inside a family, it just doesn't blossom out of nowhere. There's been some sort of exposure in the past that actually gives them this idea of this, especially if it's internal to the family. So, that's just a nugget to be kept aware of, that there's been no charges, there's no other claims of anything, but it just doesn't blossom. But I then did some research. How would it blossom? How would this happen if there was no prior exposure to this? Is someone just miswired or rewired or whatever the hell's going on, you know, the nature versus nurture thing? There might be some of that, but the way the household structure and their religion and home was laid out, it was set up for this, and this is how. Very small house when they're growing up, basically three bedrooms, as I understand it, you know, one for all the girls, one for all the boys.
And then they got their compound eventually when the TV show kicked in.
Right. You know? But very, very strict when it came to any kind of sexualization. There was none. And what they wore is very, very strict internally. They did not talk about the birds and bees. You didn't do any, you didn't even have social media. Social media wasn't allowed until you're married.
Yep.
When they went to a beach, when they went anywhere, they had a term they called Nike, which meant all the boys had to look down, because it was, and from their religious standpoint, it's the girls' fault if they're looking provocative to entice boys. That's doing a broad sweep.
It is. No, and it is. So, it's, yeah, they go right out in the shiny, happy people.
Right. And so what happens is when you're in super close proximity, where family activity, where you are under blankets, you're cuddling, you're doing all these things, and you're not exposed to the sexuality that emerges as you start becoming teenagers and what is appropriate, not appropriate. And the big thing that plays into that is the ultimate authority of age. And so as Josh is one of the older males, everything trickles down. So everyone has to listen to and respect the authority, because they are the protectors. The males in this organization, in this religion, are the ultimate protectors for everyone feeling safe. And whatever they say is gospel, because they are the voice of God inside that house. And so that's where that perfect storm starts happening internally. And then when something does go sideways, forgiveness, forgiveness, forgiveness. It's a recipe for all it takes is one little bad seed and the entire thing blows up. Because, and my final point on this, I apologize, is so we've seen so many cases where people do abhorrent things, like Corey Richens, because she grew up with zero guardrails and so she's all over the place. I can do whatever I want. What's interesting here is there's very, very strict guardrails. There's guardrails for their religious behavior like this. But unfortunately, what they're doing to what Josh and his brothers accused of doing to the girls inside this house and others didn't really fall within that guardrail. It falls within legal guardrails. Legal guardrails are way out here, but the church guardrails and their household guardrails are here. So it was all nebulous. So it got forgiven in here. It never reached out here because we don't report. We keep things hushed. They are conflict avoiders to the nth degree. And what how do you avoid conflict? We don't share. We forgive. There you go.
Yeah. And I want to get into some of that, the more the legal ends of it, in our next segment, where we talk a little bit more about the religion itself, because it's insane.
I know. I was pouring out everything I was consuming the last couple God, of days.
I
know.
I fell asleep, and I've watched it before. I watched it when it came out a couple of years ago, Shiny Happy People, which is on Amazon. Highly recommend if you want to get a good education or a crash course on this.
Makes for good TV.
I fell asleep watching to it last night, and I had nightmares of the Duggars. I'm not even kidding. Like, I woke up, and I had her voice in my head, Mama, and she's talking like this and everything. I'm like, oh, my God. You know,
you have nightmares. I get giddy when I see craziness like this. I'm like, oh, man, this is a great show. Look at this crazy nutter.
It's Kendra. Let's talk about her. She was 19. This is the wife of Joseph here. She was busted over the on Friday, and I think there's a lot of confusion here. So I wanna make this clear.
Yep.
These are two separate cases. There's Arkansas charges. There's Florida charges. Florida charges are against. He looks like a freaking like one of those dolls that you like stick your hand in, like the Charlie McCarthy kind of like right. He looks like he could be a Charlie McCarthy family of dolls. We're looking at the image on YouTube right now. If you're by the way, anyway, there was two charges, Arkansas and Florida. The Arkansas charges, are different. Four counts of second degree false imprisonment, four counts of second degree endangering the welfare of a child. Why are there Arkansas charges and Florida charges? Well, because he has to be extradited back to Florida for his far more serious charges, lewd and lascivious charges of, I'm not going to say the words because I don't want YouTube to ban us, for victims less than 12 and lewd and lascivious behavior by a person 18 years or older. So it's because he was 18 years or older, and the allegations go back to when this child was 9. Apparently took a blanket, put him over them, and then used his hands. And holy shit. And then comes out the child finally realizes, hey, I've had this memory about this happening. Talks to dad about it. Dad gets on the phone with Joseph Duggar, and then also on a second call with a tiny town police officer here, a detective. And then he gets Joseph to admit it on the phone.
Yeah,
there you go. He did it. So Florida charges are that against him. The local ones, what happens in Arkansas, and I think in a lot of states, it automatically triggers a local investigation to what's going on here in their home because they have children. So they went to the compound, the one we've all seen on TV, and they discovered from, again, this part I can't confirm, but some reporting has been saying, essentially, and it makes sense with the charges here, of the false imprisonment, which basically comes down to they reversed locks, allegedly, on some of the doors. So meaning a door where the lock is on the outside, like into the hallway, and then the person on the inside can't get out. Kind of, you could create a false imprisonment in a bedroom or something if you wanted to. That's what some are reporting. I can't confirm it, but that it does kind of sound, it's a misdemeanor, it's a light charge, but it is what they found in the house when they went to go do their welfare check that was triggered by the charges in Florida. So she has that. She has another hearing coming up shortly. They're misdemeanor charges. But when you have someone like this, she's 19. She was raised in this sort of environment too by another family of the same faith, and I put in air quotes. Mm-hmm. And then you dig, then you become part of this family. I feel bad for her. I mean, she's a grown-ass adult too. She's in her 20s. At some point, and maybe this is the window. Maybe this is the bottom of the barrel. Maybe this is the warning sign here for you. The canary in the coal mine. But I think the canary just like swallowed half your family. Wake up and get the hell out. Because my God, look at what this system is. Look at what but she knows no different. And that's got to be such a difficult thing. I mean, you got Jill, who's written the book and has come out talking about her experiences. I guess start looking at other folks who've left this system as a place, a starting point to try and figure out a path out. I mean, what do you think here? Is this something where somebody hits this moment and they need to say, okay, no more?
Yeah, it's really, I mean, I'm just thinking about it, as you just laid everything out, Tony, it is literally world shattering.
Yeah.
Because from birth, from your first memories, you have this image of your parents, of your family, of this tight-knit, safe group that you have a belief system that has brought great security. You are love bombed, you are validation bombed, and none of it disingenuous either. And that's what I found really compelling about reading her book and understanding what's going on here. There's no intent of taking advantage of people. This is really about trying to overly protect your family and your kids, because in this religion, the kids are God's quivers. I think that's what they call them.
Yeah, you know? The quiverful movement. And then you also you start shitting out kids the second that you can. And because that anchors you into the family, and yep. You can't get out because this is where she's at. She's already shit out four kids. And now guess what? You're pretty much indoctrinated into this family.
And speaking out against that, how do you? Because that's your entire image of yourself and your entire world. It's not like you knew another world. Like people that are indoctrinated into cults later in life, they had a life before the cult, and so they can have a compare and contrast. There's no compare and contrast here. It's completely their identity. But it's striking because there's so many striking things. I actually looked at the Amish comparatively because Amish is another, you know, religious compartmentalized, you know, way of life thinking. And the Duggars have only 11%. I think this church in general has only 11% people that stay in the church. As opposed, I got the numbers. I think the Amish have 98% stay in the Amish. And so I researched, where are my numbers? Oh, 85% stay Amish. Here's why. Because the Amish, it's an entire way of life, an entire community. It's job security. It's learning a trade. It's responsibility. Now, granted, the claims of abuse are equal across all these across the two religions, because they keep them in house, they keep them internal, and so they don't get reported. So it's very hard to get accurate reporting. But because of the way that their church, being the Duggars, interact and allow people to interact with the regular world, there's a bigger draw, more temptation, and more chaos going on than the Amish community. It's interesting.
It is. And we're going to get into to the structure of the...
I'm sorry, am I jumping ahead on us
again? No. We're actually going to do that right now. We're going to start jumping into the structure of this, the IBLP, and really what has formed, what is the recipe? I mean, the Duggars, basically, you know, they're their own mixing bowl. They made their own recipe, their kids. And this is what we have. But what was the recipe? What was the bigger mixing bowl that made the Duggars? What created Jim Bob and his wife? What was behind all that? That's what we're about to get into in our next segment. Be sure to press subscribe so you don't miss it here in the feed, and give us your thoughts on this piece in the comment section on YouTube and Substack. We'd love to hear from you. We want to step back from the specific charges for a minute and have a conversation that's bigger than the Duggars, because the Duggars are a symptom of this greater disease, and I'm going to call it a disease in my opinion, or cult. It's a belief system called the Institute in Basic Life Principles. It has operated inside this country for 60 years. It shaped hundreds of thousands of lives. Shaped, I think, is maybe a real positive way of spinning it. It's probably more like scarred hundreds of thousands of families, and largely avoided serious scrutiny because it wraps itself in scripture and calls itself a church. The Duggars didn't build that system. They just became the most famous face. And what's coming out of that family right now, the charges, the silence, the closed ranks, the denial from a prison cell, none of it is surprising when you understand what the system actually teaches and what it's designed to do and who it's designed to do it to. That's what Rob and I are getting into today, the IBLP. Again, this is my opinion, and then there's Robin's opinion. Allegations are the allegations that are out there. This is an opinion piece.
And no expert on the church itself, just really what we've been researching and applying what we understand of the structure of what we've been reading about the Duggars and apply it to human nature on that.
Yeah, so there's that.
Not Mormon.
Yeah.
St. Martin put that in there. No, it's not Mormon. It's a Baptist offshoot.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting. This weekend, somebody I was talking to that made the comment of, well, it was 5 years ago since it happened. This little girl's coming out. Yeah, you mean like she was, because somebody said, you mean third grade? Yeah, I mean like third grade. Meaning Joseph Duggar found it to be a great idea as a 20-some-year-old to go get a blanket and put it around him and a third grader that wasn't his own child, and then have whatever the hell he's doing with his hands. This is the folks we're talking about. Yeah. Part of the IBLP. This is part of their religion. Okay, so let's talk about this, because they have this this teaching, the umbrella of authority that they invented, where essentially you have the church, and then below that you have the fathers, and then below that you have the wives, and below the children. And basically, it's as long as you're looking up to the closest umbrella to you, nothing can ever get at you, assuming the umbrella above you actually wants to protect you and not do horrible things to you. That's where the problem seems to arise, when they seem to have a lot of these folks around that they have broken umbrellas, to put it nicely. Yep. Robert, we're talking in the last segment about this a little bit, where basically if there is an accusation or something horrible that comes out, take, for example, this, the accusations of the 13-year-old in Florida that Joseph has allegedly admitted to. That happened when the girl was 9, they would not report this to the police because in their mind, that's not something you do. You go handle it internally with dad. And then as long as dad says, I'm sorry, I guess everything's okay. And according to them, if this were a business and this were like in the handbook of don't report this shit, just go to HR, I think they'd be shut down pretty quick. But because we put the magical R word in front of it, religion, it's like, oh, it's okay. It must work out good. You said the word God in a sentence, didn't you? I guess he'll protect us from everything.
Yeah. And the father, the patriarch, is the end all be all in this entire thing. They are the protector. And what I found really interesting about this concept, you would think in situations where you have this kind of abuse being reported very accurately, very descriptively, that but it looks like from the outside it's being covered up by this patriarch. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, though, if law enforcement gets involved and comes in, they're telling and instructing everyone, be completely transparent, be completely open, be cooperative. Yet what's interesting is that the children in these situations live in fear of this closing, because that goes against what they've been taught for their entire lives of honor thy parents. And so it can have that impression from the outside of they're cooperating, they're doing all these great things, but at the same time, though, are they really? Because they're still honoring the one thing, the only person that matters is what the father thinks, and if I don't get the approval from the father, nothing else in life matters, because that comes down to that.
And I can guarantee they feel guilt.
Yes.
Guilt for coming forward and doing this, because now they're blowing up this family and they're doing this. And I assure you, there's passive aggressive shame that's going around.
Shame's the motivator. So shame, and Jill even talked about it in her book. So remember, one of the greatest motivators is fear of human, is fear is one of our motivators for action. And the way we fear, the other one is shame. And so what they'll do is, if you don't adhere to the protocols, if you don't adhere to seeking forgiveness, and more importantly, giving forgiveness, shame.
Yeah.
And they will avoid shame at all costs. And so you see the battle that's going on internally here of these poor little children. They're God, what a mess.
Someone said, to be fair, describing or disclosing abuse is met with denial regardless of religion. Yeah, I mean, to a certain extent it is, but what we're talking about differently here, what I think is different, and I don't want to say just the IBLS or whatever it's called, the IBLP, it's true. I think a lot of religions have a very similar type structure. We're going to handle it here this way. They're just a lot more direct about it. They're just more like, it's in the handbook, here's how we handle this. I think a lot of other religions are kind of like a little more in the gray area of like, well, is there enough pressure that we're going to get a news story done about us, or can we handle it over here? I mean, essentially, it's how much pressure do you have to put on the organization to do the right thing? They're going to stand there and be your moral authority all day on everything and tell you this is right and that's not, and you got to do it this way and that way. But the only way that we're actually going to take a stand and do what we're supposed to be doing, what we've been telling you all you need to be doing, is if you threaten to expose us. And then if you threaten to expose us, we're going to threaten you by going after, you know, your morality, and you're going to be excommunicated and this and that, and we're going to take away your inheritance if you say anything negative about our family. Let's sign a few NDAs. Jim Bob's good at that. I mean, it's just insane. It's insane control, and it's being executed by these people who are claiming they're just the moral authority because of their religion, and they seem to be completely tone deaf and blind to the actual actions that they're taking and how the rest of the world perceives them. But they've also been conditioned to not give a shit either. I mean, it's really this kind of magical cacophony of, I don't care what anybody thinks about me. I'm going to be the moral authority. I'm going to do the exact opposite of what I'm telling everybody, but somehow I'm still justified if I just keep telling myself this and the few people around me just keep reinforcing my ways of thinking.
It's interesting. And also Robert Pickett said something about, you know, political parties, agendas. Yeah, so I actually looked up the numbers on this. Cults, religions make up 51% of the cults on average around the world as a pure definition of cult. And then political parties and all these other things make up the other 49% if we're just looking at numbers, as Robin does. So, sorry, Tony, I had another point based on that. I was riffing off of what you said. I can't remember.
How does anybody look at the picture of this family and go, there's not something really wrong going on here? Because it's not 1847 and we have birth control. Like, I mean, just looking at the family and just...
So
going,
that's attractive. So Tony, I looked at this. So again, let's do our thought experiment. Remove the horrendousness that we've seen. Say you are in a world that you're not around or been exposed to a lot of really, really healthy people. You've been in a world of chaos. Because this, you think in terms of what inspires a family to start following this path. Well, say that you're in a world of chaos. And so the mom, Jim Bob's wife, she originally was not part of this. You know, she got part of this because of her husband. Yeah. And so here you are. You're in a world of chaos. There's a lot of unhealthy things. There's a lot of maybe sex, drugs, and rock and roll going on. And then you have an opportunity to calm the chaos in your life. And you see a photo like that. And again, you're not looking at unhealthy. You're looking at, wow, family, community, safety, guaranteed social networks, friends. So that's the attractiveness. Because I looked up and I said, what would attract someone in 2026 to want to voluntarily start from nothing and go into that? It's those things. It becomes attractive to people, not weak-minded people, just people seeking some calmness, some serenity, some community. So that's the attractiveness of it.
And the sick part about it, I mean, and I remember when the show was on TLC years ago, I never really watched it. I would watch Trading Spaces and I'd see the promos for it. And I remember...
Tax credits.
I mean, tax credits galore, I guess, too. But I mean, and this is just the one that was exposed. I mean, there's tons of families like the Duggars that are out there. They're just these ones had a TV show.
Yes.
Relying on the other kids to raise your kids is essentially what they ended up doing.
Oh, they had a buddy system like Navy SEALs.
They did. Sorry. They had a buddy system. Yep. and they talk about it. And it looks all lovely and neat in your, you know, 3-minute segment on 19 kids and counting, or counting on, or whatever. And it's, oh, isn't this is enduring. Look, they're learning how to be grown-ups and taking care of each other. Yeah, that's all fine and well to a certain extent, but they're kids raising kids at a certain extent. So is that part of the breakdown here? Because look, Josh was a kid raising kids. He was one of the older kids, so he had some sort of moral authority to a certain extent above the other kids. I'm wondering how much of that, when you get into these sort of dynamics where you have kids without reps who are teenagers, who are riddled with emotions and riddled with hormones and no life experience and very little guardrails or actually very strict guardrails, little education,
just
I guess.
Appropriate ones.
Yes, there's guardrails, but nobody knows why they're there or how they're there or what they do. And when they're not educated on any of these sort of things, and then you end up with this nightmarish scenario that some of these kids went down and then end up going into adulthood, I guess, and finding a proclivity to enjoying it. I just think like that recipe right there, this idea of, well, okay, you're this moral mom and dad. You don't have the bandwidth to to parent these kids. There's not enough of you to go around, even if you tried. So the good percentage of the parenting comes from someone who's not that much more experienced in the world than themselves. And God knows what other sort of misguided thoughts they may have, these boys. Clearly, there was an issue with at least one of the other boys who thought this was a good idea. And now there's a second one. So yep. I'm going to guess, I don't know, the conversations amongst the boys maybe should have been a little more, I don't know, parented. I really wonder what was going on, what was being discussed, and how much was just looked at as, well, boys will be boys. And then this nightmare happened. I don't know. But I mean, I feel like when you put the authority to help raise other children in the hands of other children, you might get some bad outcomes.
Yeah, it was children raising children. Again, this is just according to Jill. The parenting that was going on in the house, and she says her parents were extremely loving and everything, but yeah. It was at night. The girls would be in their room, the boys would be in their room, and then dad would sit in the middle and he would preach to them. They'd do their Bible study at night, and that was the parenting. But during the day, they had their buddy system, just like the Navy SEALs yeah. do. You don't get anywhere without your buddy. And so it was adolescents raising adolescents.
Yeah.
But, and again, how did they reinforce that? That was where they got their... that validation, that acceptance. So that's what they kept seeking was they kept seeking more responsibility as a sibling because that's where they got their attention from was the accolades they got from raising their siblings well. And the guardrails, the rules, they put the rules in place. The only rule there was exactly what the Bible says in my interpretation of it. You just stay within these guardrails right here and you're fine. The problem that this manifested was when it came to sexuality, it was ignored. It was like suppressed, ignored. You don't talk about it because that's a sin. You can't think, you can't even think bad thoughts because that's a sin.
Which is insane because it's their brand. Brand is effing like rabbits. But it's like, we don't speak of this. We don't speak of how the sausage is made.
It's a control system put in place in an uncontrollable situation.
And it's just enough. They hit all the right points with all the people at the right moments in their lives to make them go along with it, to make them think, oh, this is warm and fuzzy and lovely. Like they had half the country bamboozled that was watching this shit show. And then they're all shocked when it all goes to hell.
And it was also homeschooling, too. It was homeschooling, yes. But not homeschooling from what the state put out as homeschooling. No. But it was actually the religious homeschooling that actually the church itself created the schooling program.
Yes.
So it was...
Books, their workbooks. They have like a handful of workbooks that they teach from. And it's a really sad excuse for education. And again, these are all things that if it was a business that was conducting this... it would be sued seven ways to Tuesday and would be shut down. But because it was a religion by Bill Gothard, who built his entire organization on this, who's been accused by more than 34 women of harassment and assault and is 91, still operating. He's never faced criminal charges. The organization he built is still running. And when you look at the Duggar story and then look back at the man at the top of the system that shaped them, I mean... it's not shocking. It's none of this is shocking. I remember watching the show, like I said, back in the day before there was one charge against any of them. And I kind of had a feeling that, 10, 20 years from now, we're going to be telling a very different story of this family.
This is a recipe for something going sideways.
Yes.
Hard. Yeah, it really was. If you look back at Ruby Frankie, and I know someone mentioned, Kevin Frankie he wasn't the patriarch in his family. You're right, Ruby was, but but she said he was.
It's the same level of like just willful ignorance at a certain point where it's like, my religion says I shouldn't step up and be a human being and care for my children.
And remember, Ruby's whole motivation too is the same motivation you're using here. She was constantly seeking approval from her mom. Yeah.
And they end up putting someone in a place of religious authority that then overrides actual authority,
right,
or just moral judgment, and then you have to follow the authority. In that case, Ruby Frankie was the authority. In the cases over here, it's who's ever saying we're not going to the police. I was watching the doc last night, The Shiny Happy People, and it was one of the friends, a very close friend of the Duggar family, of Jim Bob, that sat down in the doc and said, you know, Jim Bob, everything you're running on here for Senate, and all these, you know, real moral principles you're trying to stand on, involving people who do these sort of things to children, by your own campaign, by your own standards, he would be in prison. So, and then they sat down and thought, oh, maybe we should go turn him in. And they did, and they brought him in. So, but it took somebody catching it. And I think that's just the real shitty part about the Duggars and the whole IBLP and all of it. It's like, okay, once you catch them, they're like, oh, you got me. But it takes somebody to go and say, hey, wait a second here. Then it's like, oh, you got me. But until then, they don't have to seem to have, or they've not demonstrated the moral authority to stand up on their own and say, I screwed up. Not that people are anywhere really turned themselves in, but the fact that they're able to do these things and just kind of create like a game of cat and mouse, where it's like, hope I don't get caught, no matter how horrible the shit is that they've done.
Again, their level of forgiveness, that's why it was their get out of jail free card. As long as I admit it and seek forgiveness, you have to give me my forgiveness. You know, meanwhile, and then when that happens, and you don't, as an adult, as the only adults here, the mom and the dad don't understand. It's like, just because you forgive your son doesn't mean he's going to change his behavior. Just because you send him to a work camp, you know, with a neighbor for a couple months doesn't mean he's going to change his behavior. There was no belief in counseling, rehabilitation, if they're in, but you can't in those situations anyway, or letting law enforcement know, or anyone. It's just a disaster. And to the other, you know, they will definitely tell you they're Christian, they're fundamental Christians, and it is Baptist, is what this is an offshoot of. Again, in one of the questions in the comments there.
Yeah, in horror stories.
Yes,
story
I know it doesn't. Yeah, forgiveness does not negate consequences, Mark Fry. You're right, but according to them, it does.
According to them, that seems to be how it functions quite often. It's not shocking. It's not shocking. And I feel like there's far more to come here.
Well, and who's the guy that, you know, again, I can't believe the name is skipping.
The church?
Who started the
Bill
church?
Bill Gothard.
And how many charges, how many accusations have been against him?
Well, quite a few. I believe 30-something, but he's never been criminally charged with anything. He's maintained his innocence on everything. 34 women have come forward with charges of harassment and assault. He's 91 now, and he's another guy where when you there's so many preachers you can watch on television and stuff, and there's several that are just creepy as shit. In my opinion, there is a level of creepiness to him, but he's very soft-spoken, and of all of them, he's really not the type that you're going, I wonder what's going on behind the scenes here. But apparently there's a lot of accusations that have been there. But again, never been charged, maintains his innocence. But I mean, 34 doesn't come out of a vacuum either. That's just kind of like, it's like,
to bring it up is that, you know, in the, you know, again, 51% of the cases we see of cults, 51% are a religious offshoot. I'll call it a religious offshoot, not religious mainstream, because this is a religious offshoot, is typically created by someone that is taking something that they can use, an infrastructure that's always already in place. They can then manipulate it in a way to serve their own issues.
Mm-hmm.
Just saying.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's like almost any time I hear the words, we're an offshoot, like, just run. Yeah,
an offshoot, eh?
Like, an offshoot. So somebody had an idea that the original extreme church said, you're too extreme for us, but over here, it's all fine and dandy. That seems to be how so much of it works. Anyway, your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. We'd love to get your thoughts. There's a lot more to come on this case. All right, let's move over to another one that that we've continued to watch. More questions that continue to come in. Nancy Guthrie, we're going to be turning this over to you guys, some of your questions, and we'll do our best to answer them in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. Tammy True Crime on Instagram said, the family just put out a statement themselves asking Tucson residents to search their memories. Not law enforcement, the family is asking this. After 49 days, and they're going back to a very specific date in January. I believe it's the 11th. Yeah. What does that mean when the family, you know, stops waiting for the investigation to reach people and starts doing it themselves, starts going to the actual, to the community saying, here's the dates I want you to look at, and here's why. That's interesting to me. It's almost like we're overstepping a little bit, but sometimes I think you kind of might need to.
Yeah. So when Savannah and her family came out with this one, once again, I think they have their shit in line more than anyone else.
Yeah.
Because when you think about it, because as soon as I saw the statement, I loved reading statements. I love watching statements because, you know, you want to kind of assess what's going on. You know, how's it being made behind the scenes? And Savannah, each time, she's actually had a very specific intent about who she's targeting in her message that they're putting out. Remember, the first one was intended for the perpetrator. The second one is giving grace to the perpetrator. And then the next one, I think, was about the people surrounding the potential perpetrator. This one is now targeted towards the people in the community. And I think it's just a really good job she's doing to make sure that she is staying on top of it, because with mixed messaging, with weird messaging, with cryptic stuff from law enforcement, and not law enforcement, but just really the sheriff in general, I think looking to her for clear messaging is all she feels she can do. Because again, what you're trying to do is you're trying to feel in control of an uncontrollable situation. So at least she can control her messaging. So I thought it was a good reminder to folks. Those dates, I think those dates are important because that's what law enforcement is focusing on, because they do have those still photos of what looks to be the porch guy at another date staking out her house, Nancy's house. And so they want to really remind people, check ring cams, check nest cams, check your surroundings, jog that memory for anything that wasn't on the date of Nancy's disappearance, but, you know, backtrack to that January time frame so you can kind of see what is in your mind to try to give a tip or a lead to kind of move this thing forward.
Here's another one. The FBI is now going around asking about people who moved out of Nancy's neighborhood right before she disappeared. I know I've seen rumblings of this online, too. One person says that feels huge to me. Am I reading too much into that, or does that tell us something about where this investigation is actually pointing? Thoughts?
Yeah, I think it's a good move, you know, because out of sight, out of mind, you know, if you move from an area, you're not really thinking about it. So I think it's hitting two possibilities here. One, if you're moving out, you know, you might still have things that you saw, but you dismissed it because you're too busy with your move. And so that's one thing, kind of jog the memory. But also, if you're moving out, who knows you're moving out? So I know one of the theories out there is that the porch guy or the perpetrator of this might have used another house or a vacant house or a house that was in the process of moving out as a staging point. So I think it serves a multiple things here. Again, just because, and I think it's important to remember too, just because law enforcement wants to explore possibility doesn't mean they think it's this possibility as like 99% is the truth.
Yeah.
This is how you flush out leads. If it comes up as an idea, like we've said numerous times, you get 40,000 leads in, probably 30,500 of them are going to be garbage, but you have to flush every one of them out because you just don't know. And also you just don't know, because you're following up on this one lead or this one idea, doesn't mean that you'll get another jog of memory. Someone's idea, it'll go this way. Ah, it's over here. So it's usually going to be 1 or 2 degrees of separation of what you're searching for.
Yeah.
But you can only find that 1 or 2 degrees of separation if you do this. So they have to flesh it all out.
And I think everyone needs to also remember, too, a lead does not mean that it's leading you to necessarily, once you hit that lead, to the actual perpetrator.
You said it much better than I was trying to.
that lead is leading you to some information point. That, I mean, it could be if that's what they may think, but I don't think that's the case here. It's leading to someone who may have just some information, and they may not know what sort of information that person may have. It may just simply be, yeah, I moved out on this date. Did you have any cameras around your house? No, I didn't. You know, did you see anything around it? Like, No, I didn't. Okay, done with the lead. And that may be it. If the lead has nothing to give you and they can prove that they had nothing to do with it, that may be as far as that lead goes. Not, I think a lot of people, when they hear lead, they think at the end of every lead is going to be, you know, the hot fudge sundae with the predator on top. I don't know why he'd be on a hot fudge sundae, but I guess that's just what we're going to go
it's about getting the creative juices in your mind going to kind of get the people thinking in terms of this and talking these things out and talking with law enforcement, or even just talking amongst yourselves, because you can only start remembering things once you start putting things on that palette in front of you. And so that's what leads are there for, is just start the brain working, because you start here doesn't mean that it's going to not go here. I mean, it's really just keeping the doors wide open, especially when it looks like they, in the situation you are now, is they have nothing super solid, like they're following a track, because this track is definitely going to lead to the perpetrator. No, they're pinging on everything they possibly can.
How concerned should we be about Nanos lying recently about his track record, about no issues in the past? The comment is, Robin, the sheriff of this case, was just exposed for lying under oath about his own record. Says you spent years of your career detecting deception. When someone in power lies that smoothly about something that documented, about his own track record, we're not talking about the case, about the 70s and 80s in El Paso, I believe. Mm-hmm. What does that tell you about how they operate in every other area of their life? Or can it be super compartmentalized? Could it mean absolutely nothing that people, as you often say, you know, they're going to be operating in their own self-interest. And if their own self-interest is not talking about the disciplinary measures from 40 some years ago, and the odds of ever coming back up to light are slim to nil, he might lie about those, which he appears to have done. Does that have any sort of influence or weight on how this case is being handled over here?
So do you really think anyone is shocked that he was trying to control his narrative for his entire life? See what I mean? So when it's not shocking to us on the outside, it's not shocking to those on the inside, because it's a pattern of his life and behavior he's done for a very long time. So because it's not shocking to anyone internally, not shocking to any of us on the outside, is it really impacting anything? No, because I've never really focused on Nanos in this, because again, he's just the elected mouthpiece.
Yeah.
Blah, 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 blah. I'm focusing on the detectives. Will this behavior impact their ability to be effective in work? Most likely not, because they're used to working around him. Now, granted, could it be better? 100%. If you actually had a solid leader at the top that people loved to work for, they couldn't wait to show up every day, they couldn't wait to brief their boss on what's going on, the boss was asking the right questions, the boss is getting them the right resources, the boss communicating with all the other people that have a vested interest in this to keep that information flow. In other words, if you had that person at the center hub right there of that wagon wheel that actually people love to communicate with, they couldn't wait to talk to, that could make a huge difference. But since his pattern behavior has been consistent throughout his entire life, he's extremely predictable, and they know how to work around him. Unfortunately, take.
And that's very true. I mean, I'm sure there are good investigators on this case. Working around him is an interesting take on it, because it really, I think, is
probably my entire career doing it.
Yeah. I mean, and you can speak to that when you have to work around people that are above you. How much more productive could it be if you weren't having to work around, but you were working in tandem with somebody who should in principle be on the same page and trying to elevate you to, so you can do your work better and you can shine better and you can produce better results, rather than working against you?
It could make such a huge difference, because what you're doing as an investigator is you're trying to coordinate everything that's going on in the investigation, all the resources, all the research, all the other agencies that are involved. And without a boss that can actually be an advocate for you, to take the burden off you, to be that reaching out and touch someone, because really what an investigator needs is someone that actually can reach out and call a colleague on the phone and say, hey, my guy here, my woman here is working on this investigation. What can you do to help us? Instead, the investigators themselves are having to call their contacts, call their friends, say, hey, I need some help. And so it takes more bandwidth away from them because they have to be the point man doing this. Rather, it would hopefully be your bosses that are doing it for you because they are in position. I remember when I was still in the FBI, the most important thing for a resident agency to have from their boss, and they would get removed. I saw people be removed in the FBI that they look great on paper, but if they ruined relationships with the locals, they're removed. Because the number one goal and objective of leadership in a local field office was to foster relationships with all the other law enforcement in the area, because we all need each other. You know, the FBI's got, I think at, when I was in, it's like something like 15,000 agents across the entire country. That's not a lot. Working counterintelligence, we're talking just hundreds. Mm-hmm. So we're always relying on other organizations, other people, other relationships. And the role of the leadership and management is to bring those resources, bring their relationships. They are put in that position because they have the reps of the investigative side, so they know how to be a resource and know how to guide the ship. But more importantly, they're bringing the resources of their relationships to bear for that investigator. And if you got a guy or a woman in charge that can't do that because they're hated, they're despised, or their messaging sucks, or they blow relationships left and right because they're too self-serving, that's where it hurts.
Hey, Mr. Nanos, there's a little advice for you on how to, you know, maybe improve things.
I got a few reps.
I got one more for you. And this is from me. This is from Tony in Arkansas. I've been actually wondering about this. So we've had so many cases here where after the crime scene, and then there's the cacophony of reporters and everybody gathering around doing whatever they're doing at the crime scene. Oftentimes you have the perpetrator that shows up to those places. We haven't really talked about that at all in this case. And it was a zoo around Nancy's house for a good month before they got that more cordoned off and under control as far as who could park where and do what on these streets. I'm just wondering, do you think they were taking a close look at everybody who was coming and going from the scene in the days and the weeks after? Again, because we've seen this before. Sometimes you're the person who you're searching for is right under your nose and you don't even know it. And that makes me wonder about the investigation a bit of could that person have been right there as an onlooker? I don't know. I mean, I'm not accusing anybody or anything like that, but I'm just wondering, did they blend in? Could they have blended in those weeks following as everybody's like, who is it? They're like, over here.
Look at me smiling. Tony, that's a great insight.
I mean, I
haven't heard anyone say that. And no. I don't know if they've done that either. That would be a really, really good thing for them to do. That's a great question. I would think they did, but
I also would think they weren't dropping 16 gloves everywhere either. But they did, and they are, so we're here.
There's such chaos. The problem with it is, I mean, so in hindsight, what you'd have to have set up is you'd have to have cameras set up. But here's our challenge to our friends and colleagues in the media sector. Take a look at the footage you got and see if anyone stands out.
Yeah, I mean,
and pass
seriously.
That along. Those could be tips. I'm not kidding. That is a great observation, a great tip. I haven't had one person talk about that, but you're very right. Now, I don't know if this area is conducive to that. I haven't looked up research for this kind of event, whether this is a type of criminal event that someone would be a retread back in the area. It always is a possibility, though. So I definitely think it needs to be flushed out because that's a great insight. It's a really good insight.
And probably the type of crime it is, too. I mean, I wouldn't say necessarily. I mean, if it was a B&E, kind of like how you and me think it might have been, that went horribly wrong. I don't think they're back there lurking around. I think they're like getting out of Dodge as quickly as they can.
That's my intent is run. Yeah, I think they're in a real run mode.
If it's not that, if it is something that we're not seeing, and if it is something where it was more Coburger-ish, for lack of a better term. Those are the type of folks that come back.
So here's an interesting conjecture on this. So I know others have been floating the idea, the horrendous idea. I won't get explicit on it, there was another intent that they had for Nancy inside that house. Now, if that was truly, you know, everything's a possibility until you know the truth. If that was actually one of those, a possibility, that actually has probably a higher possibility of this person showing back up, because guys like Coburg like trophies, they like reminiscing, they like kind of playing that tape back in their head because it gives them a rush. So it's definitely something that, especially on the early on days, they need to kind of take a deeper look at that.
That's what I'm saying. Early on, I mean, who knows? Anything's possible. But I would say those first handful of days is usually when we see the perpetrator make an appearance. This happened in Koberger case. If we were to dig into it, I'm sure I could find 50 other examples.
Oh, it typically does.
But I would be very curious of anybody who is out there reporting that has, I mean, just take a look. I mean, there was a lot of onlookers, but be very careful too. I'm not telling anybody start pointing out people and, you know, doxing them. I'm just saying it would be, you know, if there's something off that seems weird, let the authorities know. Not like let's do a TikTok on it, but I would think you might have some interesting footage in those early days.
I tell you, it would take a lot of manpower and a lot of resources to kind of sort through all this because of the media nightmare and show it was afterwards. But what I would be looking at is, let's take a look at the ring cams on the neighbors for the week or two following the event as well. Yeah. Again, you're going to get a lot, but
it's a lot.
You'd have to rule out what actually is media, what actually is, you know, but that would be a very interesting look to kind of go through that. Again, hey, what happens as cases start getting more limited on the leads that they're following, those kind of things will pop up and they'll start actually clearing those, I would think.
It'd be interesting to see where any of that leads in a case where we don't really have much.
I haven't heard anyone talk about that. That's a really good one, Tony.
I thought of it early on and I didn't really say anything. I don't know. It was no real intent. I think I just kind of got distracted every time it came to mind.
Well, it's not. Well, here's what I like about it. This, we're not talking about another wild conspiracy theory. We're just like, hey, this is something that might be looked at because it kind of makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, it depending on what the intent was there. Your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. We'd love to hear them. Weigh in, and we'll continue our conversation right there. Robin's book, it is out now. You can get it wherever you get books. It's Not All About Me. Go and check that out and get in on that. All right. Until next time, for Robin, for Todd, I'm Tony Bruschi. We will talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.